Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the Blue and Orange Nation Talking Mets podcast. This is Vinny with my co-host Mike. How are you tonight, Mike?
I'm good. I just got to sit back down and just dancing around the room to that song with my dog MJ. Sit down, MJ.
Yeah.
Okay, I'm good.
Cannot get enough 86 Mets music. But anyway, we got a good show for you tonight. We'll be talking about everything that's going on and not going on with the Mets so far this offseason. We're going to be joined by our very special guest, Adam Rubin, who covers the Mets for ESPNNewYork.com. And a little bit later in the show, we will have, New York Sports Talk Radio favorite, Artie from Brooklyn. We're not quite sure what Artie's going to say, but we're sure it'll keep us entertained. I hope he doesn't think that this is the appropriate forum to talk about the Patriots' ballgate. You never know with Artie. But we'll worry about that when he gets on. But, Mike, I guess we should first start off with, the latest, what has gone on in Metville over the past couple weeks. One of the things that we should cover, which I think it's, gives a lot of people a little bit of either a head scratch or a chuckle, depending on your point of view, was the news that Fred Wilpon was named to be the head of the Major League Baseball Finance Committee. I think it's either that new Commissioner Manfred has been in a cave for a few years and didn't realize that Fred Wilpon really is probably not the guy you want to be taking care of your finances, considering the Madoff scandal. Or maybe it's the opposite. Maybe he's trying to kind of, really give an ironic thumb of the nose to everybody to say, this is how much I care about the finance committee. Any reaction to that, Mike?
There's just some things when you see it that you just can't take it seriously, even though, you should, I guess. And, it makes no sense to me. I guess this is the way Major League Baseball wants to run their business. And if you caught this, I know we're having Adam on hopefully shortly. In his piece where he reported it, I loved the picture. There was a picture. And it was the caption, really, I loved the most. It sort of fit the story. There was a picture of Fred Wilpon standing next to Mr. Met. In the caption, I guess in case we didn't know who was who, said, Fred Wilpon to the right.
Oh, that's great.
So, and, I mean, that's just, all you can do is laugh at it. I don't know what else to do anymore when it comes to some of this stuff.
Again, it's more for comedy purposes than anything else, I guess, at this point. But I guess we can't worry about it too much. Just have to move on. The thing I thought was funny about it, Mike, is that there are some people who were, calling for Major League Baseball should get involved and investigate the Wilpons and perhaps try to, see if they are viable owners anymore, kind of like what happened with the Los Angeles Dodgers a few years back. Well, what committee would be looking at that, right?
Yes, finance.
Right, so Fred would be investigating himself. So maybe that was to put that fire out to make sure that never happens. But anyway, that's really, like I said before, just good for a chuckle. Let's talk about some other things going on with the Mets. I guess, the only other thing that has been kind of lingering out there as news or non-news is, people have been, the beat writers, some folks have been saying about how, Dylan G should be traded in the next, it's been about 10 days since they said they thought he'd be traded in the next 7 to 10 days. So it would make you think that they really would like to trade him before spring training, but the calendar's getting pretty short for them to get that accomplished. What do you think, Mike, about the chances of Dylan G getting traded and, what about possible destinations? You there, Mike? Maybe Mike is having some technical difficulties, but we'll, you know, look, Dillinger, they've been talking about trying to deal him for a while. I guess it's possible that he ends up going to, they've been talking about some teams in the NL West as possibilities, the Giants, although there's some talk that Ryan Vogelsong is going to be coming back to them, so I'm not sure about them as a destination. Talking about the Rockies, talking about the Padres. So we'll see. I mean, they are saying that perhaps the James Shields is still a free agent, hasn't been signed yet, could be holding up the market for Dillinger. Seems a little bit of a stretch, in my opinion, considering they're two totally different pitchers. You would think that they would have different markets. But we'll see. I do think that he will get traded, but as most Mets fans believe, I'm in the camp that doesn't think that the trade will really result in that much coming back. Perhaps a reliever, perhaps minor leaguer. I'm not quite sure what they will get back. I don't think it's going to be a major piece. I think that there was some hope that it would be a major piece, on Sandy Alderson's part, that maybe he was part of a bigger deal in that whole Tulowitzki thing. But we shall see. Mike, you there? Mike seems to be having some technical difficulties. We'll get him back on in a minute or two. But anyway, the Dillinger thing is one of the things that's probably the only move that the Mets will make. I think there was even some talk that, believe it or not, they didn't think that they would be able to acquire another lefty reliever for the bullpen, which was on Sandy Alderson's shopping list earlier in the year. Seems a little strange because you would figure those guys are readily available. But, that's neither here nor there. We'll see who they end up with. Hopefully they'll end up getting somebody soon or at least making some kind of a move. Well, we shall see, especially when you see other teams making some pretty big moves, such as the Nationals ending up getting Max Scherzer, which, obviously, huge, perhaps the biggest free agent that was available going to the Nationals is a pretty big deal. But, again, you could also say maybe it's not that big of a deal considering the fact that they already had a pretty stellar pitching staff. So it's a little bit of do they really need it? Is how much of an incremental upgrade for the Nationals is getting that Scherzer? Don't get me wrong. He's obviously an unbelievable talent, one of the top pitchers in baseball, but the fact that if they didn't have him, they would still be, the odds-on favorites to win the National League East. Mike, we have you back.
Am I back?
Yes, there you are.
Am I back on?
Yes, there you are. Sorry,
yeah, sorry about that. I don't know what happened to my phone, so we went to the backup phone.
No problem. You're back on. So I was just jumping. After we talked about Dillinger. What are your thoughts in terms of two things that I was just talking about? One is Dillinger, do you think he will be moved? And if so, any predictions on either who we would get back in return or where he would go? And then the other thing I was talking about is Max Scherzer signing with the Nationals.
Okay. When it comes to G, that's the move. We've been talking about that for about a month now. Things are moving along the usual ponderously slow way they do with the Mets. That's the move. I think it'll be this year's Ike move. We'll shop and shop and shop and shop and shop, and eventually we'll get somebody who's 7 or 8 years away from the major league. So, yes, I do think that move will happen, and we will not get a major league player back. That's my prediction.
And Mike, I would tend to agree with you on that as well. That's what I think. Although I do think it's a possibility that it ends up being somebody like a left-handed reliever in the bullpen who we get back if we get a major league player. What are your thoughts on the Max Scherzer signing by the Washington Nationals, Mike?
Hey, that's the market value. I never freak out about the actual dollar amount, so I know a lot of people get crazy and talk about how teams are going to regret it in the future and all that. We'll see as far as that goes. But as far as,
the
pitchers were very good already.
Right. So they probably had the best staff. They probably had the best staff in the National League, Mike, before that signing. which is pretty interesting. Pretty interesting to allocate the resources there. And this is not the Blue and Orange Nation Talking Nationals podcast, so I don't want to spend too much time thinking about what the heck they do. But, you know, it's just interesting, especially when, you know, when we put it through the context of the Mets and how, you know, the Mets have some holes that they're struggling to address, and that, you know, that you have a team like the Nationals who went out and committed, as you said, a ton of money to add to what right now is a strength. And I understand that there's projections that there are certain guys they may lose down the road. But, you know, to allocate that kind of funds to you know, make a great rotation incrementally better, you know, that's a tough thing to see from a Met fan perspective when we're not sure how to address, you know, obvious shortcomings.
Yeah, it's that whole, you know, we've talked about the whole, you know, two leagues where we both grew up during periods with the team where they were so bad, where you looked at, you know, the Mets season versus the teams that could really win. Well, when it comes to the money stuff now, I feel like that's kind of where we're at. And I'm not getting into whether we can win or not, but, you know, there's like two leagues and we're not in the league where you can do anything when it comes to that stuff. So it's not even that. I don't even think about, like, when I start hearing the guys like, sure, because I know we're not in.
No, and look, I don't think we should talk about it in terms of ability to win, because I do think not just the Mets,
right,
you know, but there are teams who are not in that, you know, upper stratosphere of payroll that can and have won. So it's not really about ability to win with the payroll, but you're right. There are certain players that we don't even consider, and he's one of them. So that's interesting. But anyway, Mike, we have our very special guest here. We have Adam Rubin, who covers the Mets for ESPNNewYork.com, one of my favorite beat writers, as you know. Adam, you're on with Mike and Vinny on the Blue and Orange Nation Talking Mets podcast.
Hey, guys, how are you?
Good,
great. Thank you so much for joining, Adam. We really appreciate it. Mike and I are both big fans. We think you do great work covering the team. We definitely would like to get your perspective on a few things. I guess we have to start with what every conversation about the Mets starts with these days, Adam, which is about shortstop position. We'd like to get your perspective on Wilmer Flores. You know, are fans a little bit too, you know, quick to be freaking out about Wilmer Flores' ability to play shortstop at the major league level? What's your take? Do you think that it's a huge concern, or you think that he's a major league caliber shortstop and that the Mets will be able to get away with it?
Well, for better or worse, it certainly seems like he's going to be the shortstop this year, at least at the start of the season. The Mets keep harping on the fact that now twice, two straight off seasons, he's gone to this Mike Barwis camp, the first time in Michigan, this time in Florida, and he's really worked on his agility, and you won't notice defensively that he's a liability. But, I mean, the proof is still in the season if he could demonstrate that. I mean, I know people are skeptical, and for me, it's a shame that they really didn't make a stronger move to upgrade at shortstop. It probably would have had to been by a trade because of the liabilities of the free agents out there like Steven Drew and guys like that. But given this team should be over .500 this year, given the caliber of the pitching, you would have liked them to make a little bit stronger push to really upgrade that position. I mean, if you think about the winter, going into the winter, the priority was getting an outfielder. They got Michael Kadire and they got John Mayberry Jr. also. But the other priorities were upgrading at shortstop and getting a second lefty reliever to complement Josh Edgerton. In both those aspects, they really didn't do anything.
No, which Adam, is very surprising, and that kind of brings me to my next question for you, which is about, you know, look, it seems as if Mike and I have had a discussion on previous show, and I don't know, I had an email Q&A with Matt Cerrone on Mets blog today about the topic about, you know, the real scarcity of trade transactions, especially for major league players, that the Sandy regime has had. I mean, we ran some numbers. It's kind of staggering. You know, Sandy's made 12 trades in his 4-plus years as Met GM, and to put it in context, you know, in the past 12 months, the A's have done 23 trades. A.J. Preller has done 9 trades since he's become Padres GM in 5 months. So it's kind of, in contrast, it's pretty staggering how little activity on the trade front this front office has executed during their tenure. I know payroll is a constriction, but do you have any insight, Adam, into why it just seems as if, you know, the trade market is just not an option for the Mets and during this organization's, this front office tenure?
Well, you've mentioned the payroll, where trading prospects for established players really doesn't fit into their payroll model, but it's also the fact that they're one that I think they feel like they have to win all the trades instead of just making equitable trades, so it makes it harder to deal with other teams. And then the other problem, too, is just that they're just very protective of the prospects. I mean, probably too stubbornly protective of the prospects at this point. I mean, prospects don't always pan out. You can hype them up all you want, but we see from past Mets history over the last 10 years, how many names have you heard? And then when they finally reach the major league level, if they reach the major league level, they really don't pan out. So at some point, you got to turn from just collecting prospects to start really upgrading the major league roster. And I think the pitching's at a point now where if they'd done a little more on the position player side, look, they're probably not on the seat in the Nationals anyway, but they'd be a favorite for the wild card, at least, instead of someone who's going to be probably just a little bit over 500, which is close enough to be in the race, but really, in reality, may not even be a playoff team.
No, and you're right. It's a little scary considering that this really is a window, and the Nationals notwithstanding, where, you know, with a couple of stronger position players, you could really be talking about this as a mid-90s win team, potentially. But, you know, that's neither here nor there. You talk about prospects, you know, Mike is still holding out hope that Fernando Martinez is going to pan out one of these days. but anyway, talking about the players that are here, Adam, who would you peg as having the best shot at having a breakthrough season for the Mets this year? I mean, who would you have your eyes on as really a guy who can step up?
Well, I mean, that's a tough question because I think we pretty much know about all the players at this point. I mean, the guys who haven't debuted yet that I suppose are conceivable you'd see at some point this year are guys like Kevin Plawecki, Matt Reynolds, especially if Wilmer Flores doesn't do well. But, I mean, you know all the players already. It's just, can they duplicate what they did the second half of last year? Like, can Travis d'Arnaud and Lucas Duda duplicate what they did in the second half of last season over the course of a full year? I mean, Daniel Murphy, you know what he is at this point. I mean, there are questions about Wilmer Flores, the defense. David Wright, is he going to bounce back? Was it really the shoulder only that caused his production to be down last year? Or is it the point that he's getting to 32 years old now and maybe the production is drifting off regardless of the shoulder? And then the outfield, I mean, Granderson had 20 home runs last year, but he was very streaky and inconsistent. So, I mean, that was a disappointment. You'd like him to perform a little bit better. Lagares, if he duplicates what he did last year and maybe was a little more selective at the plate because they're probably going to use him in the leadoff spot. I know I'm not really answering the question. Kadires and the other outfielder, I mean, to me there aren't that many guys, opportunities for breakthroughs because, I mean, you pretty much know what the guys are. You just hope they live up to what they could be at this point.
Well, then let's look at it from the flip side then, Adam. Do you think that there is anyone, you know, that's a candidate that you think is going to may take a step back?
Well, I mean, there's certainly candidates for that. I'm not saying they definitely will. I mean, Jacob deGrom had a fabulous year last year. I mean, the league could catch up to him a little bit. I still think he's a very good pitcher. I mean, Juan Lagares had a very good year last year. Maybe he drifts down a little bit. So, I mean, there's certainly – and then Duda had 30 home runs. I know it's a couple on the last weekend of the season to get to the 30. But, I mean, we saw Ike Davis hit – and I'm not trying to say that Lucas Duda is going to be Ike Davis, that kind of bust. But, I mean, we saw Ike Davis hit 32 home runs one year also. And I know there were extenuating circumstances with the ankle injury and the Valley fever and all that. But I mean, there's certainly candidates to regress or at least perform at a more normal level that maybe last year was the outlier.
That's true. And with the way the team is constructed, unfortunately, I don't think they can really withstand people taking steps back with the roster they have if they're going to compete. Question, was something we were talking about right before you had joined us, Adam. We were talking about Dylan G., a lot of trade rumors. You know, there was some talk that they thought he was, you know, imminent to be traded in, you know, this week or so. What's your take on where the trade market for Dylan G stands at this point?
Well, I mean, Sandy Alderson has said his preference, and the likelihood is he'll be traded before spring training, and the Mets pitchers and catchers report on February 19th. So we're talking 4 weeks away from reporting. I think it's actually 4 weeks to the day now from reporting. So you would expect in the next 2 weeks or so, 3 weeks or so, that Dillon Gee will be moved. I mean, they really don't want to bring six starting pitchers to spring training, partly probably because of a payroll. Sandy said it's harder to trade someone in spring training, although I'm not so sure, because you just wait for an injury and then maybe you could sell Dillon Gee to that team, and heck, you might have an injury yourself. But obviously that's $5 million or $5.3 million that Dillon Gee is going to make this year, so they probably don't want to fool around with that type of money. They want to know what their payroll is going to be and to keep it down. So I suspect he'll be traded fairly soon. Where is he going to go? I mean, I'm honestly not sure. I guess Colorado has been a possibility the whole time, but we'll see where he ends up. But it's probably at this point, and maybe they get a second lefty reliever to pair with Edgen, but at this point it's probably non-40-man minor league guys that so that's like an A-ball guy, double-A guy that maybe pan out, maybe don't.
So a little bit more of one of the Sandy's usual, future type deal, rather than trying to plug a current hole on the team.
Well, you know, like for instance, with the trade with the Pirates, where they sent Marlon Byrd and John Buck, Dilson Herrera was an A-ball guy at the time, and that's worked out very well. He's a guy who could break through, especially. Well, he's going to probably be the second baseman at the start of the year in 2016, because Daniel Murphy is going to depart. So, I mean, just because you get A-ball guys doesn't mean they're non-prospects. Just a further window away, so it's a little harder to project what they're going to be. There's more uncertainty, but I mean, certainly they could get a Dilson Herrera type A-ball player, maybe for Dillon Gee, and Dilson Herrera's case, it broke right, and maybe this other guy they end up getting for Dillon Gee breaks right too.
That's true. And sometimes you really do need the longer window to be able to evaluate those trades. Thinking about trades that didn't happen, what was your take on the reported, at least maybe brief, conversations that the Mets had about trying to acquire Ian Desmond? Right before you came on, we were talking about the Nationals and about players, you know, such as Scherzer, who are, you know, out of the Mets' price range, obviously. Desmond would represent a pretty big upgrade, that type of player, and almost somebody who you think the Mets at this point of their, you know, payroll arc wouldn't be able to afford. But it got fans totally excited to think about it. Do you think there was anything there, Adam, or you know, that type of, you know, is there any possibility that a big player like a Tulowitzki, like a Desmond, or somebody is even in the realm of possibility for the Mets?
Well, Tulowitzki, I could answer even more easily. The Rockies owner now is on the record saying not happening. I was told not happening back in November, more recently after a John Heyman report. Someone inside the Mets told me, well, maybe up to a 5% chance, which is still not very likely at all. And that's not going to happen with the Rockies, obviously. As far as Desmond, once you hear that Syndergaard and another prospect are involved, you knew the Mets aren't going to pull the trigger. They're not going to trade a Noah Syndergaard, whether it's in the division or involving a third team. They're not going to trade a Noah Syndergaard for a player, no matter how talented he is, who's a free agent after the 2015 season. They're just not going to do that. They've been very stubborn with the prospects as it is. They're not going to reverse course like that. So it just didn't even pass kind of the sniff test of something from the Mets' perspective that would end up happening. Desmond will be a free agent in a year. Do I think they're going to go after him in a year? I don't think so, because I think he's going to get a $100 million-plus contract. And you look at the commitment to Granderson for a couple more years after this year at whatever it is, $18 million, I forgot off the top of my head. David Wright's getting $20 million a year. If the payroll is going to stay at this level, and I really do expect it'll stay at this level or slightly higher, just because guys are arbitration eligible like Harvey and their salaries are going to start going up, I don't think the payroll is going to go up much from free agents at this point. I think it's going to have to be internal guys as the additions going forward.
And so you really are going to be all in, rolling the dice on these young players coming through. And if it doesn't happen, they're going to have to be back to square one, I would assume.
Well, I mean, if you look at it, you already have Darno behind the plate. So if Plowecki pans out, great. You have two catching options. You have Dilson Herrera, who I think at this point is a pretty good bet to be pretty good. He could be the second baseman a year when Murphy departs as a free agent. You'll have Matt Reynolds as a hedge against Wilmer Flores not doing well. And then Brandon Nimmo should start the year in AAA, and he's not. I mean, the problem with the Mets is they don't have any kind of Freddie Freeman-type bats in the upper levels of the minors that you could say are big, big bats coming on the way. But they do make the point that they do have some position players coming. It's just not that really fearsome bat. So there are position players coming. It's just they're not maybe they're A minus, B plus prospects as opposed to those A kind of blue chip prospects.
Right. Yeah, and they're looking, I guess they're trying to go with the model of, you know, you don't have to build around superstars. You know, you get a lot of above average players with this pitching staff that it's be enough, or at least that's what their hope is. Mike, I guess
it's generous sometimes to give say they have a plan because sometimes you just don't see it. But obviously it's to keep the payroll down, build through the draft, strategically trading big pieces for prospects, and they're at the point now where they build up the pitching staff to a sufficient level. It's just do they have enough batting to get by?
Fans have to pray that there's a plan because if there isn't, we're in a lot of trouble. Mike, you have some questions for Adam?
Just a couple, Adam. First one is, we don't see, you guys see a lot more, you're a beat writer, you see a lot of things that we don't see, specifically I'm talking about with Collins. He's, very unpopular with a lot of people in the blogosphere, et cetera, who tear apart his moves, but they don't see him handling, the clubhouse or anything like that. What do you think of him as a manager?
Well, I mean, any manager could quibble with in-game maneuvers. And is he Joe Maddon or someone like that? Tony La Russa in-game? No, he's not. But in the grand scheme of life, I really don't think the in-game maneuvers actually amount to that many wins between the best manager and even the worst manager. I think the bigger sign of a manager is do the players play hard and do they respect the manager? And I think the Mets, you've seen even in years when they faded, they played hard for Terry Collins. So I'm glad that Terry's going to get an opportunity this year with, could the team be a little bit better offensively? Sure, but at least he's going to get one shot in his 5 years with a legitimate team to at least try to get a postseason berth as a wild card team. So, as I said, he's probably just kind of the middle of the pack in terms of managers. But as I said, if players play hard, that's half the battle, more than half the battle, and he gets them to play hard.
Yeah, and I mean, one thing, I've always said about him is if you look at the teams he's had, right, what are you going to do with that?
And the other thing you have to consider, too, is that, people get frustrated about lineups and things like that. And is he actually filling out the lineup card on any given day? Sure, but a lot of what he does is executing front office philosophies. And, I mean, he meets regularly with Sandy Alderson. And if Sandy Alderson wants a particular player to play, is Sandy Alderson filling out the lineup card that day? No, he's not filling out the lineup card that day. But Terry knows his job is contingent upon keeping Sandy happy. So if Sandy wants to see certain players in the lineup, that's who's in the lineup.
I agree 100% with that. I mean, it's, Sandy's made it clear through his history, how he feels the manager fits into the organization, and he certainly isn't, autonomous, so I agree with that.
Yeah, I mean, if you go back to even Moneyball, they call it a middle manager for a reason.
That's right. No, that's definitely the philosophy in place. And I mean, Collins does fit, I think he kind of knows this is it, his last shot, so I would imagine he's not creating a lot of wins with his management.
Exactly, yeah.
Last one from us tonight. Actually, one last comment after this, if you can stay on, Adam, and I'll be quick with the last comment. But last question for us tonight is just, so bottom line, if you had to say right now, and I know a lot can happen, injuries, et cetera, do you think this is or is not a playoff team for 2015?
Well, I've said when I like to tweet, people asking me the question, tweet back. I've said between 83 and 85 wins. And if you're above 500, the way the wild card is structured now, that's close enough to wild card to be a contender. So would I put it past them that on July 31st or on August 31st, even with the non-waiver or the waiver trade deadline, would I put it past them if they're close enough to the wild card to pull their trigger if they need a shortstop or something like that? No, I wouldn't put it past them. So could they be a playoff team? Sure. I mean, they could creep up to 86, 87 wins, and that might be enough for a wild card. Do I expect them to unseat the Nationals? I don't think there's much of a chance. I mean, the Nationals maybe still have a trade in them that sends someone out, but I mean, aside from the Scherzer acquisition, I mean, it's a really solid team as it is. Now they're going to start losing players after this year. Ian Desmond, obviously we mentioned is a free agent. Zimmerman, if he's not traded, he's a free agent. So I mean, they're going to start losing players, and then a ton of those guys are Boris clients. So I mean, over time, it's going to even be more guys leaving. I mean, both Bryce Harper and Steven Strasburg are Boris clients too. So, I mean, it's 6 years and they're gone if you don't really pay them $200, $300 million. So is the Mets year next year, or this upcoming year? Probably not. But they're getting closer to unseating the Nationals because the Nationals are getting closer to having to be broken up a little bit.
I'll just keep taking care of myself for that future as well as everything else. So one last comment. We thought we couldn't have you on tonight, Adam, without a quick shout out to MacArthur Basketball. I know they have a game Friday night against Harris. So I wanted to make sure I got that comment in. You are definitely a great supporter of Long Island basketball.
Thank you. Well, my brother actually coaches the team. For those people who don't know, that's why I tweet about it all the time. So we've been in the playoffs for the past 8 years. We've had a two-year absence, though. But if we win on Friday at Herrick's or we just win one more game the rest of the season, there's four games left, we are back to the playoffs this year. So looking forward, hopefully, to a win tomorrow night and wrap up a playoff berth. And the good thing about spring training starting this year is that in past years when we've been in the playoffs, my parents have had to do play-by-play while I'm in Port St. Lucie. They're live at the game telling me on the telephone what's going on in the game. This year, finally, spring training starts late enough that if we're in the playoffs, I can actually attend at least the first round game.
Excellent. You know, I don't remember them showing that. They don't show the MacArthur games on the screens at Duffy's, unfortunately. You don't get a shot.
Although, no, actually, not that there's too much information for people, but actually, thankfully, after I went down to Port St. Lucie, our regular season finale last year was on MSG Varsity, so I was in my hotel room in Port St. Lucie. Probably the only one in Port St. Lucie watching MSG Varsity, watching the MacArthur Baldwin game last year.
Oh, that's great. Listen, Adam, we really appreciate it. This has been great. You know, we really think you're one of the best beat writers out there. You know, you give the greatest the coverage, I think, of the team, and we really appreciate your work, and we appreciate you coming on with us tonight.
Great. My pleasure. Thank you, guys.
All right, take care.
So that was Adam Rubin. Mike, I think, Adam said some really good things. And you know, I think that the comment that I wanted to kind of circle back on that I want to talk to you about, you know, Adam has been pegged for mid-80s wins team. You know, I think he said 83, 85 wins. What do you think about that, Mike? If you were, you know, at the window at Vegas today to bet over-under of Met wins, what would you be picking?
You know, I like to be optimistic. So last year I went 84. We know how that went. Adam made a great point where, you know, we know they haven't done much this offseason, and when you ask them who's going to have a breakout year, and you kind of look at them and you go, I mean, we got Harvey coming back from an injury, right? We have Wright coming back from an injury, so I guess we could call that bounce back years. But there's not many guys poised for a breakout year, and there are guys, and he mentioned some of them, that are poised for, you know, to have some regression here. So call me concerned. Call me concerned. If I had to pick a number, I would go with that 84 number again, and the fact of the matter is that's not going to get it done.
No, I think 84 does not get it done, unfortunately. And look, I kind of, you know, I do agree. I think we're in that mid-80s number, but, you know, funny things happen. And it's not out of the realm of possibility that they win 87, 88 games, and that could get you in. So, you know, and I know that that's exactly what this front office is thinking, but it's not without merit. There is a part, you know, you can envision that with Harvey and with Wright coming back and, you know, that this creeps up to an 87, 88 win team and that you can get into the postseason. And once you get into the postseason, anything can happen. I guess my concern, and you hit it on it with the regression, it's a little bit more than just regression. It's, you know, things happen. You know, usually the way if you sat down and projected players and teams in February, you're usually not going to be right, and things happen that you don't foresee. And so if we're not foreseeing people who we think will come out of nowhere with great improvements, unfortunately the things you might not be able to see could be either guys taking step backs or injuries or anything like that. And the team doesn't have a ton of depth to really count on making that up, and that would be the concern. But if things break right, you know, this could be a pretty fun year. We all just have to keep our fingers crossed.
I think your first point, and I agree with it. You know, it's we kind of feel, and maybe it won't happen, and it's a foregone conclusion
the G will be traded, not necessarily think that's going to help this year. And, you know, it just shows that it's we're in a very odd situation, I'll call it, with this team, because you never have enough pitching, right? That's pretty basic. And there's no way, normally, if a team was in some type of window where they thought it was time to try to win, you'd be just, you know, dumping them daughter for futures, right? You're usually going the other way.
Yeah, again, not to turn this into the Nats podcast, but, you know, the Nationals have, you could say whatever you want publicly, obviously, but their contention is that they're not going to be trading a starting pitcher after they've acquired Scherzer, which means, you know, they have perhaps an extra starter, and they're not trading him, probably for the reason that you described, that they don't want to, you know, impact their window, so to speak, by, you know, giving up a pitcher and getting caught short if there's an injury. So, you know, maybe if you're not getting a huge, incremental piece for this team, maybe it's not the worst thing in the world to keep them. But, I don't think they will. I do think they will trade them. But you make an interesting point. The flip side of that, Mike, that I wanted to just address for a minute, and I'm an optimist, so I'm not going to say that I think people are going to regress. But I do think that while there is the possibility of a couple of guys regressing, and the ones that I would point out in my mind as guys who might regress would be, I don't know if Lucas Duda is going to be able to replicate what he did last year. And I don't know if Jacob DeGrom, well, I think he is a solid major league pitcher. I do think there's a possibility for that, you know, quote-unquote sophomore jinx. But I do think that there are a couple of guys who have the potential for a step forward. And the one that I was thinking of that I think, you know, maybe it's not a full step forward, but at least it's something. I think Travis d'Arnaud could have a pretty solid year, and he only showed flashes of it last year. And I think he is somebody who can step up and be and have the kind of year, you know, pretty big, you know, almost all-star caliber year offensively behind the plate. I could see
I think
that happen.
That's a great one, Vinny, and I would agree that, you know, if you're looking for candidates for growth, Dano's a great place to start. And not that he didn't have a fine year last year, but you don't know for sure that there isn't still growth with Wheeler, too.
You know, Wheel is a great one, Mike. I didn't even think of him because, you know, as much as Met fans are really high on him and what he's done, basically since he's come up, you know, he hasn't been that, you know, he hasn't been in the DeGrom / Harvey category. And if he starts approaching that level and those two guys who I just mentioned pitch it the way that they have in the past, you could have three, you know, really top-notch, 1 or 1A type starters. That's the kind of stuff that makes Sandy optimistic about the team that he's got.
Right, interesting.
I also think, to be fair, and not to sound like a true Kool-Aid drinker, we don't know what we have in Wilmer Flores at shortstop. And you know, I personally, you know, my gut, you know, gun to my head, I don't think that he is going to be, you know, an all-star caliber offensive shortstop, leaving the defense out of it, Mike. I'm not convinced that he's going to be able to hit at that level, even at the, you know, as Drubio Cabrera level offensively with no defense. However, if he does, that changes this lineup pretty dramatically also.
Yeah, no, Flores is a wild card. I mean, you know, we really didn't see a lot. Look, I'm the first guy, you know, that is convinced he can't play shortstop, but I'd be happy to have him prove me wrong. And if he can play a serviceable shortstop and hit, yep, you know, right? I mean, look what Peralta has done to St. Louis last year, and he certainly doesn't play anything more than a serviceable shortstop.
No, I mean, that is a great point. Look, and I know you're not supposed to really judge young players on, you know, their first, you know, whatever Flores had last year, probably a little over a half a season in the major leagues. But, you know, I know he ended up, his numbers were, I would say, respectable when all was said and done. And he did have a nice finish to the season with his numbers offensively. But I also saw the first part of the year, and I understand that perhaps some of that is figuring it out at the major league level. But, you know, he was, you know, batting like 220 for a pretty long stretch, Mike. And the ball was not jumping off the bat, as they like to say. You know, I didn't see the kind of offensive, you know, wow factor that you would look for a guy who plays less than adequate defense. But, you know, maybe I'm wrong. Maybe some of it was him figuring it out, and maybe similar to Travis d'Arnaud. If I'm feeling good that Travis d'Arnaud could have a big year because he seemed to put it together for the, you know, the last, you know, I guess for Travis it was a little longer, probably about 6 weeks, 8 weeks, he really had it together offensively. Maybe what Flores did the last month of the season could be a precursor to him springboarding into that kind of numbers. We shall see. But you make a point. There's not a lot of spaces where that upgrade can come from, so it's really those guys or bust, really.
Yeah, I mean, look, health is going to be huge. The problem with hoping for good health all the way around is it's rare, you know, and that's why you do, you know, the better teams usually have some depth in their system. Now, that's where I guess we're going to find out, you know, if we're more in a race and something happens and we need an outfielder in July, will they actually bring up a Nemo or, you know, do something like that as opposed to forget a trade even, you know, like actually bring up a real prospect if they need them. There was a good sign with the bringing up Pereira last year that maybe, you know, holding back all the young players is, you know, that process is not going to always be the case anymore.
That's a great observation, because if Flores gets 2 months at shortstop and he doesn't quite meet expectations, perhaps Matt Reynolds, if he's off to a good start in AAA, may be able to step up and get the opportunity to see if he can catch, you know, lightning in a bottle and take that mantle as the future shortstop. You mentioned Nimmo. I mean, you mentioned Herrera. I mean, there are even Pelecki, who Adam mentioned. You know, there are some guys who are at least waiting in the wings that, you know, can be plan B type guys if things don't work out. Mike, it wouldn't be the Mets if we didn't have to talk about some nonsense. You know, that's the way it always is with the Mets. It seems like we always have something a little bit, you know, crazy to talk about. So, you know, this year, this week is nothing different. We have there are, unfortunately, probably a couple of candidates. But the one that I want to talk about, you know, very briefly was this mini controversy regarding the off-season workout program that supposedly, you know, some folks in the internet was trying to get a little crazy about, that the Mets were charging players, specifically minor leaguers, to come to these mandatory workouts that are really said that they are voluntary, but everybody goes, so is it really voluntary? My perspective, Mike, I'd like to hear yours. I think this is a non-story. I think this fits into the category of when the team is starting to develop the circus reputation, then everything gets viewed through that lens. I think for the New York folks, you know, you'll be familiar with that from the New York Jets football team over the past few years, that no matter what they do, it gets amplified because there's just this perception that they're a poorly run organization. And unfortunately, I think that there's a little bit of that with the Mets. So something like this, that if, you know, if the Cardinals were charging minor leaguers to go to a workout thing, I don't think it would even make the paper. But because it's the Mets, it does. It doesn't trouble me in the least. You have any read on that at all, Mike?
Yeah, I just hope that Barwis was reporting all that income to the IRS, because it's out there now. You know, if he wasn't reporting that stuff, then it hit the papers. So, and that was basically the level of seriousness I took that one.
I agree. And I think, you know, unfortunately, I say it jesting that, you know, we have at least one, if not more, of these kinds of off-the-field nonsense things to talk about. I think we have to face reality that because of the state of the team right now and, you know, the losing of the last few years, that this is not going to change until they start winning. And there's just no, it's not going to change.
there's an undercurrent, it, you know, and it makes sense. And I mean, you know, you can add me in, you know, I'm frustrated with the way things have went over the last, you know, 6 years. So that's what happens, and everybody jumps on everything. I mean, we also saw everybody freaking out in a negative way because there's going to be a better scoreboard instead of, I mean, just think about that. It's like, oh, no, the scoreboard's going to be better. But people are just upset, and everything, you know, they tend to go negative with everything.
Yeah, maybe it's age, Mike, but I had a flashback, and I don't know about you. You follow it the same way I do as far as going back. I remember when there was a big deal that they put Diamond Vision in Shea Stadium. I don't know if it was called the best or biggest video board in baseball at the time, or if not one of the biggest and best at the time. And at the time, the team was bad. And it was, don't worry about the team being bad. You have the state-of-the-art Diamond Vision scoreboard. And I don't remember, you know, maybe because there was no internet at the time, but there wasn't so much of the sarcasm of, well, what highlights are you going to show on the screen that you have now? I think it was just more accepted that, like, okay, this stuff happened. But now you fast forward whatever it is, it's probably 30 years ago, the Diamond Vision, I don't even know for sure. But it was immediately greeted with those kinds of comments. Oh, you spent that money instead of on players. Oh, what highlights are you going to show? You know, that sort of thing.
Yeah, there's a real disconnect, you know. Look, for good reason, and we talked about that last show, and I'm on board with the disconnect, that there is a disconnect between these fans and these owners. And so that's driving a lot of it. And, winning will help. There's no doubt about that if they do win. New owners would sure help, and none of us can see that. So in the meantime, you know, we're all doing a little bit of the only thing left to do, you know, we're stamping our feet a little bit.
I'm praying. Well, there's something else we could do. We could be ranting about it. And who rants better than Artie from Brooklyn, who will be joining us? Artie, you are on with Mike and Vinny, Blue and Orange Nation Talking Mets podcast. How are you tonight, sir?
You know, guys, why do I have to keep calling and talking about the Mets payroll and lack of? Now, you know what gets to me? Here's what gets to me, okay? So I'm thinking Scherzer now is going to go to Los Angeles Dodgers because he turned out 144. And who does he go to? A team in our division. You know, I mean, I feel like the Tampa Bay Rays. And you're going to tell me, yeah, but Art, the Rays were right there in the World Series. And now they lost their manager and they traded their pitch. That's what's going to happen to us. We're going to have a two-year window who the hell knows there's a shortstop, okay? We're going to have a two-year window. We might be in a wild card contention, right? Be satisfied with that. And then we're going to lose everybody. Because, obviously, we can't now even make a trade, right, which makes sense to get a good shortstop. You know what the Nationals did? How about this for a little foresight? Again, I'm saying, why are they trading for a prospect shortstop, right? That I don't know who they gave up for, right? But they had the foresight to say, you know what? We're not going to overpay for the shortstop. We're not going to overpay for Squatter or whatever the hell. We're going to get a guy that we like. Give him 210, right? The same thing happened with the shortstop. We weren't going to give him 20. Somebody's going to give this kid $20 million, but it's not us. It's never us. We're never going to overpay. We're looking from the bargain basement. We're going to tell everybody we're going to Fortune Off. We're going to charge people like we're going to Fortune Off. We're going to do our closed window. You know what we're going to do? We're going to dress up our window store, right? That's our scoreboard. And have the same freaking shortstop that we had 2 years ago. Or Tavares. Or Elmer Fudd playing shortstop. That's what we're going to put on our nice scoreboard. I'm tired of this. You know, when they gave me the field, when they overpaid me tickets, I expected to put a product up there. Not to go in there with Miguel Tejada, Miguel Star, whatever the heck his name is, and playing shortstop. I can't take it. I mean, put some in. We're going to lose this. Write this down. Mike, write this down right now, okay? We got Murderers Row in the pitching staff. I guarantee you in 3 years, we're going to lose freedom. Guaranteed. Unless we do something with the ownership, which is not going to happen. All right, I'm done. All right, love you guys. Back to the Astros.
Artie, thank you.
All right.
Artie, I know you had a birthday the other day. Happy birthday from Blue and Orange Nation.
Oh, thanks, buddy. I appreciate it. I don't know how much longer I can go now. I hate
I know you got to listen.
You keep giving me the shot.
I saw the future. I'm telling you, we're going to be awesome in the 2020 decade. Take care of yourself.
Oh, I can't. All right. Thanks, guys.
Thanks, Art. No, look, Artie had the passion tonight, I got to tell you. And again, he added to the theme of let's talk about the Nationals. I understand where Artie's coming from. It's a valid point. We've talked about this for several weeks. I don't think making this about payroll is a worthwhile exercise. But you know, Artie did drop a little bit of a nugget in there. The Nationals, they actually have made two moves related to the shortstop position in this offseason. They acquired Escobar from the Rays. And in that three-team trade that was going on, they ended up, you know, sticking their head in. And, you know, it hasn't happened yet because it's a player who was drafted last year. But they're rumored to be getting a big shortstop prospect as their end of the trade where they traded. I guess they traded Steven Souza was the player that they traded, if I recall correctly. So, I mean, that's an interesting thing going back to our quote-unquote creativity discussion, Mike. You know, they saw Desmond as a guy who could be walking. They hedged by getting a prospect. They hedged by getting Escobar. And they also, by the way, let's not forget, he's a flawed player, but they already have Danny Espinosa as a backup shortstop, minor league, play him at second base kind of guy. And just to put that in context, Danny Espinosa is probably similar in terms of flawed player to Wilmer Flores. And they've put three guys in front of him to play shortstop or, you know, around him just in the event that they lose Desmond. And the Mets on the other side are using a player like that as their first and only option for shortstop. And you don't see any creativity similarly to try to get options. I think the creativity to me is more frustrating than the payroll level.
Yeah, if we go by actions, the actions in the Nationals seem to be a team that clearly thinks that their time is now and is acting accordingly. And that goes from the ownership, you know, on down. And from the ownership on down, it's not just the ownership, starts there, but on down with the Mets. To me, we see an organization who isn't really, from an action standpoint, giving off any indication that they think they're ready to do any serious, you know, damage now. They won't make any sacrifices of the future for now. That doesn't sound like a team that really believes. Now, me, I want to believe, right? You got to believe. But I'm not seeing that kind of belief from them. And it'll get settled on the field, so I'm going to hope for the best.
Look, one little thing I want to get to your Met of the Week because I think he's a great one this week, Mike. But before we do that, just one other nugget of off the field information about the Mets, which you could view. You know, this is one of those, are you an optimist or a pessimist kind of guy? You know, yesterday I believe there was a comment floating around the internet that some VP of revenues for the Mets stated that it looked like ticket sales were up about 19% year over year. That can be viewed positively, that, you know, there is a little bit more excitement and, you know, people believing in this team this year. The skeptics are going to say, well, I thought we were going to spend once we increased payroll, once we increased revenue. But I won't even go there right now. I think we should just look at that as, you know, there are people thinking with their wallets that something exciting could be going on here. And maybe that's a good thing to point out.
Yeah, I'm going to go a different way. I guess I'll be the negative guy. I don't believe those numbers. I don't believe anything this team ever says about numbers. And I think that they floated that information because they have a trial coming up and they want to make, you know,
the previous person that was working on revenue look bad. I don't understand why ticket sales would be up 19%. They're a private business. They don't share a lot of information. I just don't buy it. We shall see how many people are in the seats.
Look, that's a fair point. All right, Mike, who is your Met of the Week?
My Met of the Week is, to really excite everybody here, a person who is still available as a shortstop, as a free agent. I think too many people have forgotten that we still have a shot at this guy. Not only that, we know Sandy loves him because he signed him on January 3rd, 2012, and then once again as a free agent on January 5th, 2013, and once again as a free agent on January 18th, 2014. Yes, our Met of the Week is Omar Quintanilla.
Hey, look, the Q, I did not know, Mike, until you had told me earlier that he had signed not once, not twice, but three times, 3 years in a row. And your, you know, half-joking comments the last couple of shows that you could see him getting signed, I could actually see that happen now. Especially, look, maybe they're holding out hope that somebody is going to turn around and, you know, submit a trade to Major League Baseball when they trade G and give them a shortstop by mistake. And if that doesn't happen, they're going to turn around and sign Quintanilla. So I think we are a typographical error away from having Omar Quintanilla back on the team, which I don't know if it's a good thing, Mike. I know we want a body for shortstop, but I'm not sure that's the body.
Well, do you have any great memories of Omar?
I think I remember him getting a hit once.
I remember once that Omar had, I saw him take two strikes down the middle, and then he fouled off a couple of pitches, and then anyhow, eventually he worked out a walk, and Hudgens was still the hitting coach, and he looked so happy. And then the pitch struck out on three pitches, and the inning was over. But you know what? That's what Omar Quintanilla can do for you. If everything breaks right, he can clear that eighth spot every once in a while.
See, now there is the optimistic attitude that I was looking for.
There you go. And then real quick, some Omar Quintanilla facts since he's on Met of the Week. A college national champion with Texas in 2002. I bet you didn't know that.
I didn't. He's a proven winner.
Not only that, he's a proven winner. Well, it gets better. A member of the College World Series All-Tournament team in 2002.
So he's not just a one for
the
ride.
Drafted in the first round of 2003 by Oakland. Depot was still there at the time, so he really loves him.
See, that
one last fact,
me.
And this one's not as positive, but I do have to bring it up. Even though he played most of his career in either Colorado or Texas, his career OPS is 582, well under the Ray Ordonez, you know, line of 600 lifetime, which I consider to be the minimum requirement to play Major League Baseball.
See, now that does not fit a positive. That's not positive, and I didn't even take the out. This regime thought that so much of him that they used the first round pick on him. I didn't take that positive either. And I always try to stay positive, but those two facts make me a little bit concerned. But regardless, I would not be shocked, and neither would you, to see the return of the Q. But let's hope.
I'm predicting the date for the Omar Quintanilla press conference. It's going to be before our next podcast, folks. It's going to be 1/29.
1/29? Okay. If Omar Quintanilla signs either the 28th, the 29th, or 30th, I will make sure that, you know, when we go to the game and he's up, I will make sure that you have a nice cold beverage in your hand, compliments of me, to celebrate his at-bat.
Sounds good.
Well, that about does it, Mike. I'd like to thank our very special guest, Adam Rubin. He was terrific from ESPNNewYork.com. I'd like to thank Artie from Brooklyn with another great rant. And I hope everybody enjoyed it. Mike, it was great to talk with you again. And I guess we'll be back to giving this another shot in 2 weeks, possibly discussing the Quintanilla reacquisition.
Let's hope so. And Omar, continue to please. It's not personal. It's just business.
Thank you all. Thanks for joining us, and we will see you again next time on the Blue and Orange Nation Talking Mets podcast.